Leviticus, the first chapter.
And so I thought we'd talk about one this morning. And I love to study the book of Leviticus and Hebrews together. Leviticus, where the law was first given. And then Hebrews, where the writer of Hebrews was talking to Jewish Christians who were trying to go back to the law. They were trying to go back to the book of Leviticus and were being convinced by the writer of how that was so foolish. And the shadows of the old law, we want to talk about that, about the burnt offering. So we'll start with a look at Leviticus 1. And the Lord called unto Moses and spake unto him out of the tabernacle of the congregation, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, If any man of you bring an offering unto the Lord, ye shall bring your offering of the cattle, even of the herd and of the flock. So, when God spoke to all the people on Sinai, it was thundering and earthquakes. It was fearful. It scared the people to death. They said, We can't stand this. Moses, you have God speak to you, then you tell us what he said. So here, the tabernacle is been set up. Tabernacle is a tent. And God is now dwelling in the tent. And he's speaking in a very still, small voice to Moses. It's not the thundering, loud, scary tones, but he's telling Moses about the sacrifices. Because if God is going to relay to us a way to approach him, then that's where we should approach him. He's in the tabernacle. He's in the tent. And as we think about that, we think about the fact that we're told that when our bodies die, when our tents are folded, so our bodies are referred to as a tent. Because we're pilgrims. We're passing through this life. So our body is a tent. So here is God dwelling in a tent. A shadow of his son coming and living in a tent. When Jesus came, does Emmanuel start with E or I? Emmanuel, you know what I mean. I misspell it, I'm sure. What does Emmanuel mean? God with us. So the tabernacle is a definition of Jesus. God with us. God had finally come down and was dwelling on the mercy seat, communicating with man, telling man, this is how you can approach me. When Adam and Eve sinned, and God said, the day that you eat the fruit, you shall surely die. Death was upon man. Death is something that God wanted man to understand when he approached Moses and the children of Israel. He wanted them to understand, you are under a penalty of death. I'm showing you how now, after all these years have passed, how you can approach me, because you are an unholy people, you're an ungodly people, and you've got to be careful how you approach me. So now God is on the mercy seat, and when God is on the mercy seat, he is the same way Jesus did. He was concealing himself because he was in a cloud. You couldn't see him when you went in there. The high priest couldn't see him. He was concealed in a cloud. But at the same time, he was revealing. Isn't that exactly what Jesus did in the parables? The message was concealed, but at the same time it was revealing. So I like to think of the mercy seat and parables that they were both doing the same thing. It was a partially concealed, but it was revealing at the same time what God's plan was. When Adam and Eve sinned, we mentioned in the last lesson that they should have died, but they hid because they were ashamed. They were naked and they were ashamed because of their sin. I think it was a sign of contrition that they were hiding. They weren't arrogant and bold like Cain was. Cain didn't have any shame whatsoever. When he sinned, he was arrogant. But Adam and Eve hid because they were ashamed. That's contrition. And God killed one animal, two animals, I don't know. But he took the skins off these animals and he made clothes for Adam and Eve. And the word we're going to be talking about today is atonement. And it comes from the same word of covering. In Hebrew, the same words, covering and atonement, come from the same root. So an atonement is a covering where God is covering the sinner. It's a temporary thing. It doesn't take away sin. And so the whole process, we learn in Hebrews, something that might have been a little confusing when we study Leviticus, the blood of bulls and goats could never take away sin. Never. It was never. All they were going through here was an atonement so that they could begin to approach God. They were being taught how to approach God. Because up this point, men weren't doing anything to approach God. Very few. There were very few men that were seeking to approach God. Man had always, from the very beginning, and I don't know if it was because of that killing of the animals, I don't know if they were burnt, but we know right after that that Cain and Abel were offering burnt sacrifices, burnt offerings. And that is what God is talking about here. Burnt offerings are something that had been done by man since the very beginning. Apparently there was communication from God that they saw some benefit from it. That communication is not told to us, but men were doing it. The pagans were doing it. They were offering sacrifices. But now God is starting to regulate. The burnt sacrifices all they had before. So he begins with the burnt sacrifice. Verse 3. If his offering be a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own voluntary will at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord. So, it had to be a male. Some of the sacrifices could be female. But the burnt offering had to be a male. It had to be given voluntarily. We know that when God set up the tabernacle, when Moses set it up, God said, I want you to have a burnt offering in the morning and a burnt offering in the evening. These were compulsory. These they had to do. In fact, the fire was told to never go out. Don't ever let the burnt offering fire go out. It should be burning 24/7. The priests were there through the night to make sure that fire of the burnt offering did not go out. The burnt offering was not for a sin offering. There was a separate sacrifice for sin and trespass. If someone had committed a sin, they had to offer a sin offering first, and then the burnt offering. So it's a little confusing why God started with the burnt offering, but God knows what he's doing, so we'll start with the burnt offering. The burnt offering was totally consumed. on the altar. So what the burnt offering signified was total consecration and commitment to God. See, some of the sacrifices, the sin offering, the priest got a portion. He got a rump roast out of the offering. And he could only eat it in the holy place. It had to be eaten there. The trespass offering was the same. The peace offering not only was a portion given to the priest, but a portion was given to the person who made the peace offering. And he could have a feast with his family there in the courtyard. That's why the courtyard was so big, because people had to have the peace offering there in the courtyard. So the burnt offering was totally consumed. There was nothing, nobody took a part of that, because what it represented total consecration to God. In Genesis 17:1, God is talking to Abraham. Abraham is 99 years old. It has been 29 years since he left Ur of the Chaldees. It is going to be 1 year before Isaac is born. And God said something to Abraham after he's been following him all these years. He said, "Walk before me and be thou perfect." Be thou perfect. Now we know that word perfect has a lot of meanings. Mature. But here the word means whole. Hearted. Wholehearted. Single-mindedness. I want you to follow me with all of your might, all of your heart, all of your soul. I want you to follow me. That is what the burnt offering signified. Total consecration. Jesus represented the burnt offering, not at the cross. Jesus represented the burnt offering with his whole life. His whole life, he said, "My meat is to do the will of my Father in heaven." He said, I don't teach anything of my own. I only teach what my Father told me to teach. So Jesus' entire life was one of purity, honor, integrity, serving his Father. So Jesus' life represented the burnt offering. So here we have the person who's going to offer a burnt offering. It says you come to the door of the tent. At this point in time, you're not even able to go into the holy place or the courtyard. You can't enter. You have to meet the priest at the door. And then we'll read what he told him to do. Verse 4. "He shall put his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him. And he shall kill the bullock before the Lord, and the priest, Aaron's son, shall bring the blood, sprinkle the blood round about the altar that is by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, on the sides of it." So what a person would do when they wanted to offer a burnt offering, they would say, "You know, I have not been totally committed. I've not been doing everything I should have done for God. I've not been loving him with my whole heart. So, and I want to approach God. I want to rededicate myself." And so they'd offer a burnt offering. If there'd been a sin involved, they had to offer a sin offering first and then a burnt offering. So he had to put his hands on the head of the animal and confess his shortfalls, whatever his reason before God was to be there. And he signifying, "This is my cow, my bull, and I'm giving it to God. Understand that my sin, the sin of is upon mankind, and this is how we're going to approach God. I want to approach God." And this was the process God gave of how you can approach unto me. This was all a shadow of the perfect sacrifice that was coming in 1,000 years or 2,000 years, the death of Christ. So they put their hands on the head of the animal. It had to be the best they had. I don't know. Has anybody here ever raised livestock? Any farmers here? I've had livestock. You get attached to your livestock. One of the greatest joys, if you have cows, in the wintertime, they're out somewhere and you're going to go find them in your truck. And when they hear your truck, they all come running. It's like daddy's home. They come running to your truck because they know you're going to feed them. You have some bags of feed. I would always get square bales of hay for my cows because you could put it in your truck and go out and watch them run to you. They outlawed round bales in Alabama. They said they weren't getting a square meal. But we still had them in Tennessee. So I would carry the square bales out, and those cows would come running to my truck. Now, Dave had them named. And Dave ran the farm for me, and he said, "Daddy, do we ever have to kill one of them cows?" I said, "Well." He said, "Do we ever have to sell one of them?" I said, "Well, that's kind of what we're about here. We're supposed to sell something." But we never sold one. We never killed one. Because he loved the cows. But you get attached to your livestock. You name them. I had a brother that took me to his farm one time, and he had a bull that he had raised from a baby. And he could go out and put his... Normally, you don't approach a bull. You don't go near a bull. He could lead that bull by its ear because he had raised that bull from a baby. You don't realize how people, there was a personal attachment to your livestock. It wasn't just like you would go out and pick up a dead possum on the road and sacrifice it. You had to sacrifice one of your herd. And not just one of your herd, but the best. You know, when I had cows, if I had a cow that wasn't good at having calves, that's why you don't go to a sale barn to buy cows. That's who they're selling at the sale barn, is a cow that can't have calves. So when you go to the sale barn, you're getting somebody else's problem. So don't go to the sale barn. Well, that's what you'd want to sacrifice. This cow, she can't have a calf. She's nothing but trouble. I am so glad to sacrifice this one. No, that's what you had to sacrifice, the one that was the best at having calves. You had to sacrifice the 4-H, what you had put in the county fair. That's what you had to sacrifice. So this was a personal thing that you carried, maybe your best bull that you had raised as a baby. You had it named. And you had to put your hand on that bull knowing that in the next minute you were going to have to cut his throat. You had to kill. Now the priest would take it over from there, but you had to kill your cow that you had raised, that you had named, that you loved, and you knew that it was taking your place. And that was what God was trying to instill in the people, because he offered this at a time when agriculture and livestock was your number one investment. Everybody's investment was not in stock market. Well, it was in stock market. It was in stock. Cows and goats and sheep. Maybe that's where the term stock market came from. But that was everybody's wealth, was how many cows you had. Your dowry for a wife was 3 goats, 5 camels, and 2 donkeys. You know, that's, livestock is how your wealth was measured. So God put this on the people as something that would make it very close and intimate with them when they had to make this sacrifice, and they had to kill it. And then the priest would take over. He should kill the bullock before the Lord, and the priests, Aaron's sons, shall bring the blood and sprinkle the blood round about the altar that is by the door of the congregation. And he shall flay the burnt offering and cut it into pieces. So that's where we're going to get into the Hebrews chapter about what's happening here. They always would skin the animal. If you if you kill a deer, I've never field dressed a deer. Don't you skin it first? You should. They had to skin it because the priest got the skin of the animal. And I think that is fairly significant, thinking about the first covering that God covered Adam and Eve with animal skins. And here the priests are the ones that get all of the skins of these, all the leather hides and all the whatever skin was on these animals. It was the priest's portion. It was part of their pay. You know, back at that time, if you wanted leather, you went to a priest and said, "Hey, I need some leather." They had it. They could sell it to support their families, but the skin went to the priest. And it said then they would cut the animal. They flayed it. And the significance of that was two things. To make it burn better, you could burn it up better, cut in pieces. But number two, they could do a visual inspection internally. Because if they cut that animal open and it had cancer, it was no longer acceptable. It had a blemish. If they found some disease inside that animal, they had to scrap that one and go get another one. And, of course, the significance of this with Jesus was he was inspected through his life, through his suffering. At the end, he was put through every kind of brutal test, and he was pure and he was blameless. He took the internal inspection. And that's what the burnt offering signified, was your whole life. You are holy, you're holy, your wholehearted commitment to God. That's what the burnt offering signified. But then when they cut it up, and the sons of Aaron, verse 7, shall put fire on the altar and lay the wood in order upon the fire. And the priest, Aaron's son, shall lay the parts, the head, the fat, in order upon the wood that is on the fire, which is on the altar. But his inwards and his legs shall he wash with water. The priest shall burn all on the altar to be a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord. So not only did they cut it in pieces, they washed it with water. You'd say, why in the world would you wash it with water? You're fixing to burn it. But it was part of the idea of cleansing. We see a picture of the cleansing power of water. Maybe even a reference to baptism. That this sacrifice was washed, purified with water before it was burned. Now let's look at the Hebrews passage. Says, for the word of God is living, active and living. I'm going to turn to it. I had it memorized, but I'm not going to trust my memory. Because we want to look at it carefully. Okay, he's talking about the Word of God here and what it can do for us, and he's likening it to this sacrifice, I believe, of the burnt offering. For the Word of God is quick and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of joints and marrow. Here we have the picture, I believe, of the sacrifice, that the offering was cut open and examined internally, even to the bone. They had to cut through bone and marrow to cut this animal into pieces. And he's telling us that the Word of God is able to do that. What the priest did with the burnt offering, the Word of God is able to do for us, because we're living sacrifices. So that's one thing about the person who offered the the cow, the bull took his place, and he got to walk away. The bull became the sacrifice, and he got to walk away. So he was a living sacrifice too, as the bull died in his place. But the Word of God is able to separate even soul and spirit. You know, I'd love to spend about 3 weeks studying that. Separating soul and spirit. The soul is the part of our being that God created that will live forever. Ecclesiastes says that when we die, the body goes back to the dust and the spirit goes back to God who gave it. So the spirit is something that God puts in every person to make them a living, to animate that soul, to animate our body. So we're body, soul, and spirit. And so he mentions all three of those here. He mentions the bone and marrow, which is the body. He mentions the soul, which at death will go to either paradise or torment to await judgment. And the spirit goes back to God who gave it. But he then talks about how that the Word, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open under the eyes of him with whom we have to do. So here we see the priest did an actual inspection. They cut open the sacrifice. They cut it open and washed it with water before they burn it. But with us, it is the Word that is doing this cutting. It is the Word that is cutting into our being, into our body, into our heart. When we look at the Word, the judgments of God are already there. God told the people, if you want to approach me, this is how you approach me. Well, he tells us the same thing today. If we want to approach him, it's in the Word. He tells us how he wants us to approach him. All things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do or to whom we must give account. We are one day going to have to give an account to God for our thoughts, our intents, and we're going to be judged out of the book, out of the Word. So the burnt offering signified this total commitment to God, that we are totally consecrated to him. It is an individual effort that the person made. It was voluntary. You could decide, I want to make a burnt offering. I don't feel like I've been living right. I'm going to make a burnt offering to the Lord. It's what you did. It was totally individual. Individual versus institutional. Now, this has caused problems for mankind forever. We have institutionalism today where people, instead of their commitment to God being an individual commitment, they're more committed. They're more, let's say, what are you? I'm a Church of Christ. I didn't think you could be a Church of Christ, but they say, I'm a Church of Christ. That's a misnomer. You can't be a Church of Christ. But they're more institutional than they are an individual commitment to God. Here we see God starting this process of, I want you to make an individual commitment to me. I already have an institutional order of the daily burnt offering. That's something that's done every day by the priest. You've got nothing to do with that. I've already ordered it, and the priests have to do that. This is something I want you to do. This is where you're going to decide, I want to make a burnt offering. I want to do it, and this is how you do it. So, you know, we need to be more connected. The church would not go into apostasy if the individual members were more connected to Jesus than to some institution. And the Church of Christ can become an institution. Just like the Catholic Church became an institution, they're more committed to the Church, the Catholic Church, than they are Christ. They listen to what the Church says instead of what Jesus said. And the same thing has happened in the Lord's Church today. People will stand behind the institution, and whatever it decides to do, they're going to do it. The elders made that decision. You know, most of the preachers agree with that. The teachers at the college, they say it's okay. Well, what you've done, you have forgotten your individual responsibility, and you're making it all. That's what the Pharisees did. The Pharisees were totally institutional. Judaism, their particular branch of Judaism. And the people who followed Jesus were the ones who understood their individual responsibility to God. It does got nothing to do with the powers that be. So God was bringing upon on the people a sense that you have got a responsibility for yourself. Then he, in the next few verses, he tells the same thing again, if they offered a sheep. And in verse 14, he talks about if they were poor, didn't have a sheep, you didn't have a cow, you could offer a pigeon or a turtle dove. Verse 15, and the priest shall bring it to the altar, wring off his head, burn it on the altar, and the blood thereof shall be wrung out the side of the altar. He shall pluck away his crop with his feathers and cast it beside the altar on the east side by the place of the ashes. Who knows what a crop is? I looked everywhere trying to find out what a crop is. Crop of the bird. It's a something before you get to the esophagus where they store food. It's in their neck. It's where they store food. They just fill it up and then they eat it later, I guess, or swallow it later. But anyway, they had to rip the crop out with the feathers. So it took me forever to find out what the crop was. And he shall cleave it with the wings thereof, but he shall not divide it asunder. And the priest shall burn it on the altar upon the wood that is on the fire. It is a burnt offering, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord. So, here we have a situation where we had an offerer. We had a mediator, which was a priest, and then we had the offering, or the innocent victim. That was the burnt offering. And we see in Jesus that he was all three. Jesus was all three. He offered himself. He became the mediator, and he was the offering. So this was what was symbolized in the burnt offering, and Jesus typified all three. So I'm going to do a series on these sacrifices. So I think if we spend a whole sermon on each one, eventually we'll understand and differentiate between the different ones that we should always remember now, burnt sacrifice, what it was, what it signified, and when it was done, how it was done. And I believe Hebrews 4, 12, and 14 is alluding to that. Not just the burnt offering, but significantly the burnt offering, because a burnt offering represented total consecration, wholeheartedness to God. And it represented all the life of Jesus, including when he was 30 years as a carpenter in a poverty-stricken one-horse town in the middle of nowhere. That was part of his total consecration. To leave heaven and live in Hooterville, in poverty, that was part of his consecration. So this morning, I hope, as we think about these things, that we will decide that what the burnt offering signified, that's going to be our life. We're going to be totally consecrated to God. And we're going to understand the connection the Word of God has to that, because the Word of God is how we know to do the introspection. How do I know something is wrong? How do I know it's wrong to gossip? You know, you could sit here in these pews every time these doors are open, but if you're a gossip, you know, you're missing the mark. That's not total consecration. If you cheat on your taxes, you know, you can do the sacrifices, but the sacrifice doesn't mean anything if you're not totally consecrated to what God said. And the Word of God is all-seeing, all-knowing, all-penetrating. It penetrates into our innermost heart, like the passage in Hebrews said, just like exactly what the burnt offering was representing. The word today is the sword of that sacrifice of the priest. So I hope we all will be encouraged to decide that we're going to become more consecrated to God. And I know everyone here has heard the gospel, and we use this as an occasion. One wants to obey the gospel. This is the time to do it. But if you feel like that you've not been consecrated and you want the prayers of the brethren, this is the time to make that wish known as we stand and sing.